Welcome to another episode of Sound Business, the podcast that is all about audio. I'm Jim Salverson, and on this show, I'm talking about a part of the industry that is very much bucking the trend of recent years: hyper local audio. For the last decade or so, radio has been focused in the other direction, away from local audio, building national brands across local frequencies and delivering, certainly for the most part, networked content with a small provision for local news, weather and traffic. The business case for this is undeniable, and there is also a case to be made for the quality of the content as well, and that's a case that has been made by many people on several occasions. But has the networking of local radio left a vacuum that needs to be filled? Is there a need for genuine, very localised content to serve a very focused geographical area? On this podcast, we're going to be looking at two content creators who are doing just that and doing it very well. Shortly, I'll be speaking to Alex Whiteley, who is the creator of the Shrewsbury Biscuits podcast, a show serving the Midlands town of Shrewsbury. But first, we head to the South Coast, where Kerry Jones is the founder of New FM License Alfred, a radio station born from a podcast and now broadcasting to a potential audience of just 8,000 people in Shaftesbury, The Vale and Chase. Kerry Jones, normally I start these podcasts by saying how are you and where are you, but I'm not even sure the where are you is significant, or well, it is significant, whether it's even a question that needs asking for this podcast. So how are you?
Well, I was going to say, I'm not quite sure how I am. I know where I am. I'm in Shaftesbury and Dorset. I'm alive. That's a bonus. So that's all right.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for talking to us on Sound Business today.
Thank you.
I think probably the logical place to start is by you explaining exactly what Alfred is.
Okay, Alfred is, and I'm not showing off here, we're groundbreaking in that we're a brand new sort of radio station that started as a podcast. So we're in a tiny town called Shaftesbury in North Dorset. It's a rural town. It's a place famous for the Hovis advert with the cobbled streets and the guy on the bike pushing the bread up the hill. People think it's in Yorkshire. It's not. It's in Dorset.
Yeah.
And I had a background in radio. Long story, I moved to Shaftesbury and wasn't doing radio. Missed it. Missed the buzz of it. Started a podcast, a weekly podcast. It got some traction because we don't have a local paper in the area. We have a fortnightly paper that covers a bigger area. And we became the only source of local news and information. And all of a sudden, lots of people were responding to the weekly podcast. Then lockdown happened, and the local weekly fortnightly paper folded. And the town council supported us and said, look, you know, we'll do a leaflet drop and tell everybody you've got a podcast. Have you thought about going daily? So we did. On the 20th of March 2020, when lockdown was looming, became the source of local news and information, had, you know, the MP on each day or the chief constable or the NHS, and became a thing that was relied upon. And a thing that made me realise the value in what we were doing. And we're getting about 1,000 downloads a day in a town of 8,000 people, which is pretty good, I thought. But we were getting anecdotal information from people who had been bought Alexa devices or Google Home devices or similar things, so they could listen to the programme. Elderly people, blind people, the relatives had set them up with this device so they could listen to Alfred and keep in touch with local news. At the same time, we were working on plans for a local radio station, and basically we thought, you know, I've been in radio for 30 years and most radio stations play the best of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and today, and it's the same old tried, tested formula. But with so many radio stations now and on-demand music, so we thought our only thing that's our content is content. That's what we're all about, local news and information. So we've basically turned our daily podcast into an entire radio station, and we do different versions. We update things so that you get the basic hour-long program full of information, features, very hyper-local chat and conversation. If things happen, like a story develops, we'll do an update during the day, and we change time frames as well. So if there's an evening council meeting in the morning when people listen from 6 a.m, it'll be this evening there's a meeting, but we'll change the context into the evening and say, yeah, this evening or happening in half an hour or whatever, this meeting's taking place for scheduling on the radio. But essentially, it's a podcast going on the radio station. And in connection with that, we've set up a bunch of other podcasts, which are all highly local, just covering a 5 to 7 mile radius of Shaftesbury, one on local history, one on local business, one on nature. So we've got different shows which air each day, and then they all repeat during the week as well. So anybody listening to the radio station will hear what kind of sounds like Radio 4 for Shaftesbury whenever they put it on. There's no national news, there's no national adverts. We don't talk about things outside our area. basically a 24-hour radio station based all on local content, and it's all based on the podcast. So a podcast has developed into a radio station rather than a podcast being a spin-off of a radio station.
There's some interesting things to pull out there. I'm going to explore some of those threads shortly. But going back to that number, so population of 8,000, 1,000 people listening, that is a reach that most big radio stations would be incredibly proud of. So you've established an audience there. Was it obvious to you that this audience needed a speech-based, well, first podcast, then radio station? Because the easy option for a radio station, as you kind of hinted at there, is you do local breakfast content, local drive content, and then automated music through the day. That's kind of what we've been educated is what makes a local radio station. There isn't this need, there isn't this thirst for local content. But for you, it seems like it was an obvious step to take.
Well, the thing is, Jim, I mean, I'm a radio guy. I've done it for 30-odd years. It was all about getting a radio station. Radio's in your blood, as any sort of radio person will tell you. And a lot of my friends who are not radio, who are real normal people that I see in the pub, that live in Shaftesbury, I've got no radio mates here. They're all real people. I didn't come to work in radio in this town. They were saying, we like the podcast. We like the fact you can hear it on demand. You can just put it on when you're doing the meal in the kitchen or you're doing some housework. And I thought, well, there's something in that. And I think the world has just changed with on-demand and multi-channel opportunities. And the old model of forcing your listener to sit through a schedule. I mean, we do obviously follow a schedule on the radio because there are people who are not technology adopters. We're in a very old rural community, and I know people don't have the internet, choose not to, or have really bad internet. And just like the companionship. And it's brought us a different audience having the station on during the day. But the bare bones of it, the podcast comes first. And we did think long and hard about whether we were going to actually go ahead with the FM radio license, because if we do something on the daily podcast, just like local radio, I have people coming up in the street talking to me. So I heard that thing this morning.
So what has the radio added to it? What's the layer that the radio has made? What's the difference that has made to your audience or your provision then?
Two things. The first thing is the fact that people who would never use the internet because they can't, because of lack of ability with the technology or their age or just defiance, they can listen to us on a normal radio. So we've got people who are listening now, because we've had anecdotal stories from people who say, my mum loves it because she never bothered with the internet before, but she feels connected with Shaftesbury now, been able to put the radio on. The other thing, outside of the times when we put on the daily podcast, which reruns about five times during the day, the sort of hour-long local news podcast, and when they do the other shows like the business show, they all rotate. Outside those times, we have basically best of bits, archive material that goes around, because we've been doing a podcast for 3 years, and we had 700 hours worth of archive material, proper interviews with people. So we've been clipping the bits which haven't dated and replaying them, repackaging them. So you get just a stream during certain hours of this all local content. And people I know who are, you know, younger people who I didn't think would be that engaged in the civic side of local life. So actually, I find it really interesting because I can just stick it on and have a listen and learn stuff. So that's a totally new audience, repurposing that podcast material.
Do you think that would have happened without the onset of COVID? And obviously you mentioned COVID already as kind of one of the driving factors to creating this. But I guess one thing that the pandemic has done is it's forced people to be more aware of their own surroundings. And it's caused, I guess, for want of a better word, communities to kind of narrow into a smaller area rather than previously, as was the case, communities were getting bigger and bigger and kind of having a global focus, I guess.
I think we've always had that in Shaftesbury. It's very much a small, not introverted town. There's a lot of creative people who have London lives who will go up to London and do sort of, you know, 3-4 days in the week and come down here, but they want to be here. It's got that kind of, in a way that Oxford sometimes has, that kind of Oxford bubble type thing where everything's around Shaftesbury and everyone's really engaged with Shaftesbury. And there's some kind of magic dust about the place that sprinkles on people and they become addicted to it and become all about Shaftesbury. There are few unique places like that in the country where I've worked previously. That helps, because there's that connection there. But I think one of the big differences really with COVID was people who would not consider listening to any such thing as a podcast discovered us, because we were the only source of information. It was us that the health centre, at the time when people thought they were going to be dying in the street, were giving local information out to. And it wasn't Chris Whitty, it was Jane Dawes, who people know, the practice manager, saying, look, this is what we know locally, this is what we don't know. So that became really important.
That's a real value, isn't it, I guess? That's something that is very, very scarce, and particularly during a moment of national crisis. And I've talked before about the role that radio and podcasting can have during crisis moments. It's a medium that people turn to. But that's a real tangible piece of value that you could offer the community.
Jim, after the first week on air, I had cards and letters delivered to the house because everybody knows where you lived. I had food brought round. We got the Rotary Club Certificate of Appreciation for all our volunteers for what we did during COVID. We got the Civic Society Annual Award because, you know, we were the conduit for information locally. But also, it helped our volunteers, and we got more volunteers. We've got a team of about 80 people now who do various things in putting together the radio station. Some really talented people who had never worked in broadcasting, but they're skilled, they're talented, they can talk, and that's podcasting. And they basically had to step up because I said, look, we're going to do this, guys. We were talking loosely about getting ready for the radio station. It was all quite relaxed, and we're going to have training sessions. Then lockdown happened in the case of a couple of weeks, as we all remember. And I said, we're going to do this tomorrow. We're going to launch a daily podcast, and this is a big thing, and I need you on side. And a lot of them just said, right, you know, what do we have to do? And then they started getting feedback from it and a buzz from it because people were coming up to them and saying, I heard you. And that's the thing that keeps people going with these sort of things. When their peers, people they see in the coffee shop, in the deli, in the street market on a Thursday, come up to them and say, I heard you do that thing on Alfred. I really liked it. And we get that a lot. And we have people that sell out events just because of what's been heard on Alfred. They launched a Morrison Daily store locally, and all of the promotion, they did it through Alfred. They heard about the podcast, they announced what they were doing, they started community consultation through Alfred and through our associated website. We got mentioned in the opening speeches. It's kind of getting involved, immersed in the community, and it's what radio used to do that we're doing again. But one of the benefits in the fact that we're a podcast and not playing any music is that we're really cheap to run. We're running a full-time radio station for about £3,500 a year.
Anyone who's worked in speech-based radio knows exactly how time-consuming it can be to make an hour's worth of programming, let alone an entire schedule full of speech-based programming. You've mentioned your volunteers there, so clearly that's how you do it. But how do you ensure there is a level of quality? Who's the gatekeeper of that content? It all comes down to yourself.
Well, initially, but I mean, a lot of our team are now brilliant because they get it. They understand what the values are. The way we decided to do this, or the way I thought the most effective way, was to have content teams. And this was kind of inspired by the way the BBC used to do this with the Natural History Unit was based over in Bristol. So we have teams of people. We all communicate in WhatsApp. We've got a complete Alfred group. It's got 80-odd people in it. And then each of the separate programmes, like the wildlife programme, the business programme, the history programme, they've got their separate WhatsApp groups, and I sit across all of them. So they communicate, they collaborate, they use Slack generally to talk about things or WhatsApp. Some of them meet on a week-by-week basis or go for walks. They become friends. They work out what they're doing on each individual show and submit it to me.
Would you say that's as important? So the community that you've created around the radio station, these 80 people who are getting to create something, would you say that's as important as the community you serve? Or is it kind of a playoff between the two, that both elements kind of a balance that you get to? I'm thinking if you grow, for example, if you grow and became a more professional setup, and I mean professional from the point of view of commercially professional rather than necessarily the quality of output you're putting in, would it be important to keep that balance of this is a product that's not just for the community, it's also made by the community?
Well, I think if the community makes a programme, you reflect the community, don't you? I mean, we're very diverse in that too. We have some arguments, usually about local issues and things, rather than station stuff. So you get a good steer when you're writing stories and you're reporting on stuff, on the diversity, the range of views on things within our own internalised group of 80 people. But essentially we're there to shine a light to all the positive and great things that happen in our community. And by doing so, you feature people who people know, and that's the level of engagement, and that's what makes it sticky. Because if you miss a day, you might miss hearing somebody that you love or care about being talked about.
Going back to the content side of things that you were mentioning a moment ago, you talked about versioning and making things feel current by changing time references and putting in local weather and whatnot. Is there any clever technology at play here, or is it all manual production?
That is all. I mean, we use for playing back the radio station just an amazing bit of software. It's a radio automation playout software called Station Playlist. It's a Kiwi system. It's really ugly, but it's so good. I mean, it's bulletproof, and I love it. Compared to all the really expensive kit you can buy, it's great. It can help you with elements of scheduling. But no, I mean, it's all human intervention, really, because you still have to write something and change the nuance of something and the context of something. So it's just being aware of what you're doing when you write it and put it together and think, right, story three is about a town council meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. I'm not going to get the outcome in time for our last Alfred Daily at 9 p.m, but I need to change the context come the 9 o'clock edition, where the meeting is happening right now. I need to change it and say, throw to when we will have the result. we have quite a lot of instances where people go missing around this area, and because we've got the Downs and it's quite a remote area to in some extent for sort of rural south of England, there's lots of sometimes helicopter hunts for people. And we frequently have updated the podcast before the radio, doing different versions when there's been good news, when someone's been found. So somebody will download the podcast when it goes up at 7 a.m, and the hunt is on, and you heard the helicopters last night. We redo it at 8 o'clock and say, good news, you'll have heard the helicopters last night, and the person they were looking for has been found. It's important to do that, I think.
And it's something that a lot of radio stations can't do, even if they wanted to, particularly in this world of networks that we talked about earlier. You're clearly really proud of what you've done at Alfred. Can you see this format being replicated in other parts of the country, or is the area you're in so unique and the events that led up to the creation of and launch of this radio station, we already mentioned COVID and the demographic of the place, are they kind of all so unique that actually it's something that if you replicated it in other places, I'm in Manchester, for example, if you replicated it here, it probably wouldn't be able to reach the 12% of the population, which is an insane number, again, that you reach in Shaftesbury. So could you see it replicated elsewhere?
Well, it depends what you want to do, Jim. I mean, I've always worked in smaller radio stations, and I think that's when you have a better connection with the community and you can really reflect what the community wants, because you're more in touch with the community. You can also do things in the small market. I could talk about stuff that you'd never do in a national station or a regional or a city station or a county station because it's too twee. But you can do here because you might be talking about something or someone that people are regularly in contact with or see, so it's more relevant to them. So that's one difference. I think there are certain towns where radio, traditionally we know, where radio works and radio does not work. Mm. And some places are dormitory places where people just live because it's cheaper than living in the place where they work. And there are other places where people want to be. So I'm not great on the Northwest. It's not an area I've ever worked in, but I know just from friends that there are places like Clitheroe, which seem to be places where people want to be. There's places I know, Glossop, and some of the areas around Glossop, some of the countryside towns, people want to be. They're relocating out of Manchester. So any place really where people want to be, I think you've got some extra sparkle there that somebody can use because you've got something to play with. It's all about a sense of pride. There are some towns which really do have an active community where they'll have a civic society, they'll have Britain and Bloom entry, and we won Britain and Bloom for the South East last year. That sort of place people care about, and it lends to this sort of broadcast. In terms of things that can't be repeated, yeah, hopefully we can't repeat COVID again. That's been helpful, I won't deny that. But in terms of, you know, replicating it, I think you just need to... I wouldn't want it to be replicated in a kind of cookie cutter sort of way, in a carbon copy, because it should be all about your community. If somebody asked me to do this, and I wouldn't do it for anybody else, in, I don't know, down the road in Honiton or somewhere, I wouldn't know where to start because I don't really know the beats that Honiton marches to is. But I know what Shaftesbury is, and that's what you need.
Kerry, really nice to talk to you. I've been really impressed with the stuff you're doing at Alfred, and I will watch with interest as to how it grows and develops in the future. But thank you very much for your time on Sound Business.
Thank you, Jim.
All the links to see and hear what Alfred are doing can be found in the podcast description for this episode. Now, whichever way you slice it, and however thin your shoestring, running an FM licence is just too rich for some people. But with the current pod boom in place and the onset of 4G and even 5G phone signals, listening to podcasts is more accessible than ever, and that is a medium that can tick as many boxes as the all-singing, all-dancing radio station option. At Voiceworks, we've produced hyperlocal content to super serve many niche audiences for a variety of businesses that want to target those people, groups and locations. For example, our Adoption Glasgow and Fostering Newcastle series specifically featured candid stories of adoption and fostering processes from local, relatable families, whereas North Hants Now and Newport Live each target their local areas with a different type of content. North Hants Now, from North Hants County Council, they wanted to use a podcast as a forum for discussion on pandemic issues, whereas Newport Live targets locals in the South Wales town with podcasts as a healthy and well-being aid. For brands who want to target very specific communities, be it geographical, which is what we're focused on today, or maybe even by interest group or society group, podcasting is a brilliant tool to do just that. You can find out more about the projects I've just mentioned and other work of VoiceWorks in this area on our Work page on the website. There's links to that in the podcast description. But From the point of view of serving a local community, another supplier of such local content in podcast form is Alex Whiteley, who is the creator of the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast. Now in its fourth year, serving the slightly larger than Shaftesbury population of 70,000 people in Shropshire. Alex Whiteley from the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast. I'm assuming you're in Shrewsbury, but whereabouts in Shrewsbury are you and how are you doing?
I am in Sutton Grange in Shrewsbury. I'm fine. I'm really good, actually.
Good. Well, thanks for spending some time to talk to us about what you're doing with the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast and about hyperlocal audio. I suppose the logical place to start here is by you explaining a little bit about what exactly the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast is.
The way I explain it is, the Shrewsbury Biscuit is very much like the one show, but for Shrewsbury. We kind of cover all sorts. We speak to, you know, entrepreneurs. We speak to artists, authors. We go to events. We go to festivals. We talk about positive things, the good things that are going on in the town. The conception came from, I moved to Shrewsbury. I'm not an original Salopian. I moved here, fell deeply in love with the town. I was already doing a podcast, and I thought, oh, I bet there's a dozen podcasts about Shrewsbury because the town's so beautiful, and there weren't any. And I was like, oh, I'd love to make a podcast about this town, but I don't know anything about the town. But then a light bulb went up in my head. I thought, well, that's the selling point, is I'm learning about the town as the listeners are.
So was it a sense of local pride that you loved where you were? Was it a desire to give something back, or was it just a combination of all these different factors coming together?
A little bit of both. Well, a lot of both, really. Definitely pride. I lived in places. I've never moved far, but I lived in places like Telford and Wrexham and places where I didn't really, no offence to the towns mentioned, but I didn't really feel a connection with them. I moved to Shrewsbury and I fell deeply in love with it. I loved it so much and I felt really proud to live there. And also everything I do, I mean, I've been doing podcasts for years, but every single thing I create is always to help people and give someone something. You know, and I thought this is a great way to connect the community. And even way back in 2018, when this first launched, there's a lot of negative news, more and more dour with all the news headlines and stuff. So I want to give people some positive to listen to.
And do you think there's a genuine need for what you do? Because I've spoken about this earlier on the podcast when I was talking to Alfred, the radio station down on the South Coast. There's this gap left in terms of audio provision for local audiences by I'm going to say globalization of radio, and I don't mean that in terms of the way global has taken over the radio networks. I mean, in terms of how local doesn't seem to be as important anymore in terms of any media, be that websites, be that radio, be that TV. It's kind of an afterthought rather than a focus. So do you see what you're doing as kind of filling that void, filling that gap?
You've hit me right on the nerve there, Jim, because this is exactly where the biscuit fits in. And rightly so. You know, you take away public radio, which they have done. I mean, when I was a kid, you had a radio station for the town you were lived in. That's just kind of like how it was. Over in Shropshire or in Telford, we had like Free Radio. And then Free Radio got synergized with lots of smaller stations and then bought up by a big conglomerate. So it's not local radio anymore. So yeah, I think there is a desperate need for what we're doing, and not just in Shrewsbury and neighboring towns as well, because it is important to share this information, because as a business to business model, it's very successful. You know, I can't look at the analytics of how many people may buy a book or a ticket for an event or something because of my podcast, but I guarantee we help a little bit.
It's interesting you mentioned the commercial side of things, because one of the reasons that is given for the paring back of local content for a lot of radio stations and radio groups is the commercial viability of producing that content. So I'm interested to know how successful you've been as a comparatively small audio product, being able to successfully monetize what you're doing. Because I guess a small focus area, be it a niche in terms of locality or be it a niche in terms of topic, is automatically going to limit audiences. And yes, podcasting is a brilliant way to reach those niches, but niches by definition, particularly when they're geographic, are going to be small. So has that limited the potential for your commercial success? Or does that then become a superpower of what you do, that you can hit an incredibly targeted audience?
I think if I was a very clever businessman, I would hit, you know, go for the big bucks and go for the big sponsors, you know, the MeUndies and the, you know, the Audible adverts and things that people throw in. But no, I'm very much all about locality, independent businesses. So my own choice really is to support local independent businesses. And no, I haven't been very successful with sponsorships. I have got them. But what I was doing, I was offering sponsored months and I would charge like 50 quid or something, you know, nothing a lot, just to keep us sustainable, because this is a CIC business model. So it's all, I don't make any profits from it. So I would do it as a leg up for a business. So we'd make little bits of money. I'd make enough to, buy my Zoom H6 and then I wouldn't offer sponsorship or something, you know. this is something I need to look at very soon, because things are getting more and more expensive. The demand of the biscuit is getting more and more because, you know, we talk about hyper-local. You talk about hyper-local. It's a bit like, okay, so imagine you're looking at your town on an iPad and you pinch in a little bit more and a little bit more. The more you pinch in and the more you look in, you get into the nooks and crannies and the small little independent businesses, and you find out more about your town. So the niche grows a little bit because you're finding more and more. So I can talk to people about wildlife, about culture, about their business, I can go to an event, and then at that event there will be stall holders and I'll be able to speak to their businesses. So it grows and grows and grows a little bit more.
It's interesting you use the word support rather than work with as a phrase. And do you see it as almost like a symbiotic relationship where you're able to provide something back to the community, you're able to provide information to your listeners, you're able to provide almost like a very effective and cost-effective form of advertising to the businesses in it. And at the same time, you sound like you're feeding off the knowledge that you're getting something from this process as well, because you're hungry for information on the town you live in.
Yeah, I think symbiotic is a very good word for this. Because I've always said that the more this town gives into the Shrewsbury Biscuit, sounds like something really weird to say, but the more people support the Shrewsbury Biscuit, the more the Shrewsbury Biscuit can support the town. Because if you think about it, you know, if we can have extra money to spend on Facebook ads and things like that, I don't know. I always say that I wanted to hire a B-52, fill it with flyers and just drop them all over the town, tell people about us, you know. Because I feel like then we have a bigger voice. The bigger voice we have, the more of a help we are. We do get events where people have turned up and said they've just heard about this event on the Shrewsbury Biscuit. You know, they didn't realise this was going on. And we do have listeners worldwide as well, which has always been a shock to me. But there are people that live, and there's a lovely couple in Texas. And the lady messaged me and she said, "Hi, thanks for doing what you do. My husband is from Shrewsbury, lives in Texas now, loves hearing about what's going on back at home." There's lots of listeners in Australia, because obviously there's lots of expats over there. So yeah, we're offering something really good. I mean, like, when someone lives in Australia or America, yes, we can't offer independent business to them, but they might enjoy hearing what's going on back home.
Do you think this kind of content matters, Alex, for a community to have a radio station that's local or a podcast that's local? Is it important, or is it a nice to have rather than a need to have?
I think you very much need to have this, whatever scale it is. And I very much support all the content creators from this town, because you need to remember who you are and where you come from. I mean, yes, it is a nice to have thing, but as far as a town's identity, when we talk about history and we talk about culture, and we talk about who owns this business, what is the story behind this business? It inspires people. It inspires people to go make their own businesses and to create their own universe, their own little empires. As a business-to-business model, it is moderately a success. But I think more importantly, it is great for local culture and inspiration.
How do you measure that impact? Because it sounds like it's more than just your download numbers at the end of the day. So how do you look at that and go, yes, this project has been a success?
It's more of the reputation that the biscuit has. You know, there's more and more people coming to me and recognising me for who I am. There's more and more invites coming on. My emails, so when I first started this, I would have to look for the stories. I'd have to look for things to talk about. Whereas now my emails are just pinging, ping, 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 ping every day. You know, there's a festival here. There's an author here. There's a mental health thing I need to talk about. And that is my measure of success, is how busy I am right now. I'm struggling. I feel like I'm drowning under content. It's great. Cool. So yes, my analytics, they don't really, I mean, they go up, they go down. You know, you know how this game goes. But as far as noise and feedback, when it comes to people wanting to come on the show, that's where I scale that.
Now, I'm going to fall into a lazy stereotype here, but I think my impression sometimes of local content, be it radio or podcasts or whatever, is always of giant marrows, bake sales, that kind of thing. But I know it's a lot deeper than that. So what is the most interesting or heartwarming story you think you've featured on The Biscuit to date?
Last weekend, there was a vigil for Ukraine. About 180 to 200 people turned up. But I thought I'd give it a bit of support this weekend. Not I would give it some, but I thought I'd just go and turn up with some cameras and film it. And the weekend after, the weekend just gone, over 1,000 people turned up. It was so, so powerful that it was really moving. We recorded that as a vlog. But I also wanted to offer the local town something where that we could use. So I spoke to Dr. Phil Gittins. He's a Shropshire-born peace builder. He works with the UN to talk about how we can talk about these things. How can we discuss war? How can we deal with conflict in a peaceful way? And we released this podcast about how we can talk about these things more with our kids. That was really, really nice. And the reception we got from that was really good. The vlog we released is doing really well. So it's been out a day. It's got 1,000 downloads or something. It's doing really, really well. So that, on a local scale, is doing something that is affecting the world. Because now there's a few hundred, a couple of thousand people that are seeing what we've done. And they're now supporting a Facebook group that's designed to go and send aid to Poland. So that's very recent. That's literally released this week.
That's brilliant. That is the exact example I'm talking about in terms of impact as well. And it's a situation I find myself in at the moment I can really relate to. I've got an 8-year-old child who is hearing bits on the news about the trouble in Ukraine. He's had a mediocre explanation of what's going on from his school, but he's asking questions that I can't necessarily answer. And I can see how that offers real value to a community there.
It's hard. I mean, this is where it came from. Is my lad's 7, and we're in the car, and he turned to me and goes, I don't want it to be a war, Dad. And I sort of choked up. I was like, oh, okay. So we had to have a really delicate conversation. But I'm lucky in the way that I consider him as a friend. Friends like Dr. Phil Gittins, who's been on my show a couple of times, and he talks about how, you know, it's all about asking questions and all trying to understand where they come from. I mean, when you do the podcasts and radio stuff for a while, you learn to actually converse with people, and that's a really powerful tool from the podcasting. But I'm very lucky in the way that this is Shrewsbury we're talking about now. This is the birthplace of Charles Darwin. And not just that, it's a very artistic, cultural town. The art seeps through the walls. There's artists everywhere. This is the birthplace of Charlie Adlard, the co-creator of The Walking Dead. There's so much going on here. It's a bottomless pit of just raw talent. So I'm lucky in the fact that I can talk about people that actually do affect people on the outside world, if you like.
Well, with that in mind, do you think what you've done with the biscuit could be replicated elsewhere? And does it matter where it's replicated? Or do you need certain conditions for a project like this to really thrive?
No, I feel like there it is everywhere. And it depends who it is that's looking, you know, because if you've got, I don't know, what's the best way of putting this? If you've got someone that's very short-minded, hasn't got an open mind, they're not going to, okay. So for an example, the first episode, go back and look at this, guys. The first episode of the Shrewsbury Biscuit was about the Holocaust. You know, I did my first episode about genocide because
started
it was a local and I was kind of like, how am I going to really release this? It's still one of my most listened to episodes because it's a local author, very well respected author, Simon Bell, and he gave this amazing talk about things. It was really, really moving and really, it was a gamble to take, but it paid off. If you can talk about anything and everything and you can look in the most obscure places to find things, I think these podcasts can work in any town. The next town up for me, and I don't mean this in any way disrespectful, I work in Telford, I work with the community of Telford, it's got a negative rep at the moment, you know, you've seen it in the news. I think towns that have a bad rep need something that's positive. And I know we're not supposed to wrap ourselves up in bubble wrap, and I'm not saying that. Go and look on Twitter, go and look at the news if that's what you need to do, but give yourself some positivity as well. Find out what the good things that are going on in the town. Every town needs something like the biscuit.
I genuinely feel like you're on the crest of something here at the moment, Alex. And I think we've seen the erosion of local audio content over the last few years. The Community Radio Project has had some projects that have worked better than others in terms of supplying that. But there's still a gap to be filled. And I think people like yourself making targeted hyperlocal content, it's only going to go one way. There's only going to be more and more. So what advice would you give to someone who wanted to do their own biscuit style podcast?
Be open-minded. Look in the places where you wouldn't normally look. Yes, do the cake, the bake sales. Yes, do the local fairs or the fetes or whatever it is, carnivals, things like that. But look at normal people as well. The best thing I say about the Shrewsbury Biscuit is you may walk past a shop. You may have walked past it for 10 years. You may have never gone in. But what I might do is offer you a story behind the sign above the door. A great example is Reekin Whiskies. It's a great shop up on Wildcop in Shrewsbury. I walked past it so much until I popped in there and said hello to the guys. lovely guys with a great story. I had them on the show, and I speak to them a lot now, but I've walked past that store so many times. So you've got to be open-minded. It's not until you go in and say hello, or you hear a little bit about who owns that store, that you're going to feel a connection. So be open-minded, speak to people, and listen.
I love that as a concept. The stories behind the doors. Alex, brilliant to speak to you. Good luck with what comes next for the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast. If people want to go and see what you're doing and have a little listen, where can they head?
We're on all the pod players, iTunes, Spotify. Podbean is our host. But yeah, if you just look for the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast, it pops up everywhere. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Everywhere. Go search it. Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast. Yeah. Alex, lovely to speak to you.
Thank you very much.
And as with Alfred, all the info and links for the Shrewsbury Biscuit podcast are in the podcast description. I think it's pretty undeniable that this is an area of growth in audio. Certainly in podcasting, and maybe we'll see it too in other small community radio licenses over the next few years. As these shows prove, if the conditions are right, hyper-local audio can return some brilliant results, not just in terms of a sustainable audio product, but also in terms of real value to the communities they serve. That is it for this podcast. Please follow this show for more programmes like this, delving deep into the world of sound. And if you want help with your podcasting plans or your wider audio strategy, you can find out more about the work of VoiceWorks, the people we work with, and the work we do at voiceworks.ai.